Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Super Bowl Sunday afternoon before the big game. Joining me from Oakland, California, he was with me this week for the trade deadline in Los Angeles, and he was at that amazing Warriors game on Saturday night, which we'll be talking about in just a second, is the Hall of Famer for Manscaped, Mark J. Spears. What's up, Spears?
Man, what's happening, TV star? You got your own show?
I wouldn't say it's my own show. I'd say it airs.
That's what I'm going to call it.
It airs in the afternoon on ESPN2 on Tuesdays for a few weeks. But thank you for watching, those of us who are watching, and always our listeners. Joining us from Dallas, Texas, it's the one, the only, Band McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I tell you what, it is nice to be on here with Spears, with Bomb Temps nowhere in sight. I am really looking forward to this.
You know, both these guys played in the post when they were growing up, both tall gentlemen. You know, they call it the pivot, right? And they call it the pivot because when the ball gets dumped down into the pivot, the big man can pivot on those feet and to create a shot. The pivot, a pivot, is something that happens close to the basket. But Spears, on Saturday night against the Suns, I watched Steph Curry execute a pivot from 33 feet away. Okay, now this guy has obviously got dozens of humongous shots and amazing shots in his career. We remember that game earlier this season where he shot the ball like 19 feet in the air for that rainbow three that pretty much locked up that game. I think it was against the Celtics.
He had a big shot against the Lakers that people forget because they lost.
Right. So the Warriors are down by two. Now, by the time people are listening and seeing this, it's old hat, and the Warriors are playing again on Monday night. But I just got to pause for a minute to talk about, number one, Steph Curry's late-game heroics this year. And number two, I mean, Brandon Pajemski with the pass. It was like a pass that you see in a soccer match, or like a guy leads out, you know, so the guy's not offsides. He leads out with the ball. And it's or sort of like a quarterback throwing a guy open. Pajemski threw Steph Curry open. Bradley Beal gambles over the top, and the ball gets by Beal by, like, people were grilling Beal. I go, yeah, I guess.
What was that? I mean, what, he was, that wasn't even his man though.
Well, I know. Right? Like, so Beal anyway, let me
interject on Beal real quick. You know, so he's wearing that Batman mask, right?
Yeah, he broke his nose or whatever.
Yeah, he calls himself Beal Man. Right now, I was asking him about that after the game, and he said the mask actually affected his peripheral vision. And he believes if he didn't have the mask on, he probably would have got that steal right there. But he also lamented on how beautiful that pass was by Pajemski.
That's one of
the most incredible bounce passes I've ever seen. Like, I don't know how the hell he got it there.
And Steph catches it, pivots. Yeah. Pivot. I mean, holy Moses. All right. Well, let me tell you something, McMahon. I don't know where you're at on your tallies for cojones factor, but let me tell you what Curry is doing this year. Okay. That was the fourth game tying or go ahead field goal in the final 10 seconds of the fourth quarter in overtime this season. Fourth. Now, we know that the Warriors, at least going into Monday night, have played 35 clutch time games, less than 5 points. With less than 5 minutes, either overtime or fourth quarter. Pretty much, they've played 50 games at this point. So pretty much, what, 65, 68% of their games go clutch. So he's had, unfortunately, a lot of opportunities. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. He's got four of them. In the last 15 years, I don't know if you saw this stats. We could make this a mini trivia question. I don't know if either of you saw this. In the last 15 years, Curry has 12 of those types of shots. So that's the most over the 15 years. There's three other guys who have 10. You guys want to take a guess?
Last two 15.
Two of them are active.
I'm going to guess LeBron.
No.
No. Okay.
No. So this again, this is go ahead shots, not to tie. Go ahead in the final 5 seconds, fourth quarter in OT.
Damon Lillard.
Good guess, but no. Yeah.
Huh. Okay. The one who's retired, I'm going to guess, is Dirk.
No.
Wow. We are whiffing away.
So. And, you know, Ray McMahon's Allen. Usually good at trivia. I'm just going to say, so if the guy who's retired is Carmelo. He had 10. Ah. One of the other guys I'm not surprised about because he's known for these kind of shots. Another one is I'm pretty stunned about. I'm actually stunned, and maybe I'm just derelict from remembering it.
DeMar DeRozan.
What's that?
DeMar DeRozan.
DeMar DeRozan is the one that I'm not surprised is on there. The last one plays in the Western Conference and will be a Hall of Famer and is a former MVP. Even giving those stats, I'm not
Russell
sure
Westbrook.
I did not. Did you know Russell Westbrook has done that 10 times?
So I didn't know, but one of the reasons people say he got MVP just because he averaged a triple double that year. But if you go back and look at Russ's clutch numbers and clutch moments in that season, I mean, he had so many incredible shots that year, including the one the night he broke the triple double record in Denver when he eliminated the Nuggets from the playoffs with a buzzer beater from just over half court to give him 50 in that game and complete a wild comeback. I happen to be there. So that one's that's one of those. There are those games that you'll never forget that you cover. There's a lot that you can't remember 2 weeks later. Stuff like that you never forget.
All right. And Spears, one more trivia question before you talk about being in that game, being at that game. Okay. So I don't know what he's doing. Going to do Monday night against I can't remember who they're playing the Jazz. They're playing the Jazz, I think, in Salt Lake. Okay. He now has 43 career games with at least 9 3-pointers. I'm going to let you think about that for a second, because he had 9. That was his ninth of the game. 43 with 9 3-pointers. Yeah. Of those 43, 4 have come in the last 8 games. Okay. He had 46 in that game against the Lakers where they lost in double overtime. He had 60, become the second player 35 or older with 60. The other one being Kobe and his last game.
Farewell. Mm-hmm.
And that was the game that they lost. Those are 2 losses. That was the game they lost in Atlanta where he was like despondent after the game.
Yeah. They're 2-4 in games decided by a point this season.
Right.
So it was have an impact in their final record.
Right, and they've actually
Cajones factor MVP voting.
Right. Okay. So here's the little trivia. I'm not even going to have you guess. I'm just going to tell you. But so Curry has 43 games in his career of 9 3-pointers. Second place is Dame Lillard.
Yeah.
Want to take a guess how many Dame Lillard has in second place?
20.
13.
Wow.
13. Okay.
Because Clay's got to be pretty high on that list.
Yeah. I don't have the full list. This is all from Stats Williams, by the way. I don't give enough credit. All
right. So look, research.
Of course not. All right. Spears.
Yes.
What was it like in that arena, and what's going on with the Warriors right now? Because they are heating up.
I never get tired of watching Stephen Curry play, man.
Nope.
I mean, I'm blessed to live 8 miles away. It used to be 2, but from where he stars, and it just never gets old. You expect him to make the shot. It could be a half-court shot from the other end of the floor. You expect him to make it. And, you know, Kevin Durant kind of said something interesting last night. He called him a top 5 player of all time. And I just – in a weird way, and you mentioned the spin, I feel like he's getting better. He's, like, being more creative because he has to. They're putting all these longer defenders on him. And it's – been an issue. It's been a challenge for him because Steph isn't the tallest guy in the league, and he certainly isn't the most athletic guy in the league. So he's had to be more creative. Like, I think that spin is something new that he's adding, doing things where, all right, you're taller than me, but I'm going to dance my way past you to get an open shot. And the one thing that's been really odd to see is that Draymond's back, but in clutch time, Klay's not there with him.
That's correct.
And and I want to say that, like, other than that last possession at the end where Steph made the shot, and I think Klay was kind of a decoy, and he didn't have a good shooting night. Like, Klay's sitting, man. And
Klay had 5 points in the game.
He had a bad shooting night, and you know, you see Pazemski basically taking his minutes, and the Warriors are now finding success with Curry, Wiggins, Kuminga, Green, and Brandon Pazemski on the floor.
I'm going to tell you how much success.
Yeah.
They've only played 90 minutes together as of this moment. So that's not a humongous amount, but it's not nothing. Their net efficiency is plus 38.
Yeah.
So per 100 possessions, they're outscoring the opposition by plus 38, which is why Steve Kerr is putting Klay on the bench, regardless of what it is. And the other thing is, we can talk about
the paint like crazy now, too.
Exactly.
Kuminga has been amazing with that.
You are on, and here comes Stats Williams backing you up. Ready?
Yeah.
12 straight games with 50-plus paint points. The second longest streak in the NBA this season, and the longest streak for the Warriors in 25 years.
Wow.
So While Steph's making all these threes, McMahon, the Warriors are scoring on the interior.
Well, and almost all of those minutes that you just mentioned with Pods and that quartet are since Draymond came back. Like 99% of those, literally, are since Draymond came back from the suspension. And look, if you take Podziemski out and you put Klay in there, it's not plus 38, but it's plus 20-something and change. Point is, that four-man group with Draymond playing the five, Steph in the game, and, you know, call him a point guard. Draymond's the point center, basically, which you want to put a tall guy on Steph, good luck. He's going to have to run around a whole lot with a guy who knows how to get him the ball. And then there was this big thing for most of the season of Wiggins was stinking it up. But it was, hey, Wiggins and Kuminga can't play together. Well, they have been able to play together with Steph and with Draymond. And if you look at their minutes, like almost all of the minutes with Kuminga and Wiggins together since Draymond's come back from suspension are with both Draymond and Steph on the floor. And it's been a phenomenal quartet. And hey, Kuminga is a 21-year-old rising star. The guy, for a significant chunk of the season now, a pretty significant span, is averaging 20-something per game extremely efficiently, you know, shooting well into the 50s as a 6'7", ridiculous athlete who is a phenomenal finisher. And it's working really well with the two guys that are no-brainer Hall of Famers that are still playing at that level. And look, Draymond is back to playing at that level. For some reason, that game, the post-game conversation, well, not for some reason, because Nurkic popped off and there was a bunch of antics. Was like, you know, that whole thing of like, you know, Draymond doesn't deserve another chance. That's what I'm talking about. Dude, as long as he's not smacking guys in the face or put them in chokeholds or kick them in the old cojones, I don't want a Boy Scout Draymond.
Well, let me run through this real quick. So yeah, that was the first time Nurkic and Draymond had been on the same court.
Mm-hmm.
Since the swinging, I don't know, I guess you call it a punch. I don't even know what that
Smack,
was. It
whatever.
Got the big suspension. They started chirping. Draymond got his first tech since he came back.
Oh, you gotta love Klay on that too. the Klay ball slap. That was the biggest impact he had on the game, probably.
Yeah. I did talk to Nurkic a few weeks ago and asked if Draymond had ever reached out to him. He said no. I mean, that's now clear. But so Nurkic basically said after the game that it's only a matter of time before he hasn't learned anything. And it's only a matter of time before something like this happens again.
I do think that Nurkic kind of poked the bear a little bit too.
He was trying to, twice doing the little
small thing. And I'm like, bro, you 6'12". The dude's 5 inches shorter than you. You're bragging about him being small. Like, a big isn't supposed to call somebody small. That was kind of weak on his part, man. Like, bro, you 6'11", 315". And you're going to do the small movement on a guy 5 inches taller than you? Come on, man.
So,
and then Spears, he slapped the ground. So I'm not calling Draymond a saint, but he certainly, he poked the bear too.
What happened was,
but you, Brian, Draymond, you can't Draymond, do the Draymond small got the thing ball on a dude that's shorter
right.
than you. Right. Come on. Well,
why? I do it to my fifth graders. Yes, you can.
Yeah. Well, we all know McMahon is
exactly.
Height. He's heightist, Spears. I know you're like 6'7", but McMahon is heightist. And it's tough for somebody like me because, you know, Jackson's like 6'2", Bontemps is 6'4", McMahon's 6'5", or whatever. You're 6'7". It's hard being out here, okay? It's hard. And you got this heightist over here. What happened
in
that game?
Show, though. We ain't got our own. Well, I guess Tim got his howdy dude show, right? So
yeah. So anyway, Draymond got the ball like 12 feet from the basket. And Nurkic acted like he was Russell Westbrook taking a three and turned his back on him and like waited for him to shoot. Mm-hmm. And then Draymond scored, and that's when he slapped the floor. So they were both guilty. But Spears, what I'm getting to is what Draymond said after the game when he was asked whether he had learned anything since his suspension. After Nurkic said he hadn't learned anything, he was asked what he had learned. And you can say what he said.
No, I'll let you say it.
All right. He said, yeah, I learned we're pretty bleeping good when I play. And I will just say that over the last 10 games, again, going into the game at Utah on Monday night, the Warriors have won 7 of those 10. Okay. And the reason not, because they've won more, they've actually won 6 of 8, but the reason I'm saying 10 is for a reason. Mm-hmm. They've won 7 of those 10. The three losses, one by 1 point to the Kings, one by 1 point to the Lakers in double overtime, won in overtime to the Hawks, where they got boat raced in overtime, still lost in overtime. Other than that, two overtime losses, 2 1-point losses. Other than that, they've been winning the last 10.
Yeah.
So, Spears, be aware. And they've got lineups that are working. Kuminga's playing well. Wiggins is playing better. Steph is red hot.
And to give Draymond some credit where, hey, he hadn't had a tech till Nurkic showed up.
Also, nobody's asking Draymond to win the sportsmanship award.
No.
Be yourself. Be passionate. Be available. Don't do dumb things that get yourself suspended. Yeah. Don't lose control. And for all the
he's actually been doing a good job of that, Tim. I agree. Give him credit.
For all the back and forth with Nurkic, when I thought Nurkic was trying, Draymond got a T. I thought Nurkic was trying to get Draymond tossed. I thought he was trying to get a double T.
Of course he was.
Tossed. So for all that stuff, all the little back and forth, you know who was calm, cool, and executing the clutch? Draymond Green. He was awesome down the stretch of that game.
They've been passing the ball like the Globetrotters, man. And I think that's one of the reasons why they're getting great shots. They're getting layups. They're moving the ball very, very well. The unselfishness is amazing. And also, I think they've been better in pods, too, because I think sometimes he could get a little starry-eyed and try to do some things he probably shouldn't do. But in making sure, I'd notice of late that, look, we're going to get Steph the ball and live and die with him. And and nobody better to live and die with in the league right now than Steph Curry.
Hey, they're in the 10 seed, baby, but two timelines is back on track. Kuminga 21, Pods 20, baby. Those two guys are playing awesome basketball.
By the way,
GP2 is back.
Yes, GP2 is back. Yeah, they're getting healthy.
Chris Paul, relatively soon.
Yes, he's getting close. He's working out. Two things before we move on. One, Pajemski in February, going into Monday night, 41 assists, 4 turnovers.
Woo, 20 years old.
That's rookie. That's like, you don't see that kind of stuff from rookie. That's Chris Paul type numbers right there, number one.
He got a little, have you guys talked to him?
I've never talked to him. No, I've never met him.
Oh, he's got some spunk to him, some swag to him, man. He's an interesting cat with a great story. Like, he didn't even play at Illinois. And I asked him, how'd you get to Santa Clara? He said, well, I put my name in the portal and they called me 5 minutes later.
Wow.
And then I visited and decided to go. But he's like, his locker is right next to Steph. And he's like squeezing anything he could get from Steph, man. He's like enjoying every part of it. He's appreciative, but he's not in awe, right? He's respectful, but he's not in awe. And if somebody jokes, he jokes back. But he mentioned something about how much harder it is to get into Santa Clara. So he's a funny dude, man. And I think the people start getting to know a lot more of him, you know, obviously with Rising Stars. But he's a great story.
So Steve Kerr was a first round draft pick out of Santa Clara in '96. No more first round picks. Not that they're supposed to have
Nash. Steve Nash.
Okay, sorry. We set that over.
Yeah.
Steve Nash was a first-round draft pick out of Santa Clara in 96. No more first-round draft picks till 2 years ago. Now, they're not supposed to get first-round draft picks out of Santa Clara. I'm just saying. They had Steve Nash in 96, and then no first-round draft picks. Then, 2 years in a row, two guys taken in the teens. Jalen Williams in Oklahoma City. Second, I think, rookie of the year. Brandon Pajemski.
Yeah.
Hello. Hello, Santa Clara.
I want to go back to that.
WCC, man. Produces them. One of how many WCC players have been in the league the last couple of years? They've been. I mean, obviously Gonzaga's helping, but they've been putting some guys in.
Who will forget the classic championship level run that Adam Morrison had coming out of the WCC? All right, I'm just having fun. Just because people made fun of him because he was on the.
Hey, he does. You know, he does radio for him now,
and he should
for Gonzaga
because he's a classic. One of the greatest scorers I'd ever seen in college.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. All right. By the way, Jackson looked it up in our break. 17 current WCC players in the NBA. That's a pretty good number.
Wow.
That's a pretty good number, WCC.
For a mid-major, I'm sure they're beating some power fives right now.
Well, it's always like a thing, you know, how many can they get in? Because, you know, Gonzaga always gets a bid, and, you know, can they get in two or three? So,
we're going to have six teams this year. Won't be my school, but Mountain West is pretty good.
They could make a run, Spears. Don't count them out.
No.
No. by the way, I'd be remiss. Wednesday night on ESPN, Clippers Warriors. After we talk about the Warriors that whole time, Clippers Warriors. So check that out. We're definitely going to
be there
on that. All right. We'll be looking to hear from you. All right. So also over the weekend, the hottest team in the NBA, other than the Warriors, the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Ooh. LeBron, who
won their ninth straight game, but more importantly, now 17-1 over the last 18 games.
Another way to put that, they've lost once since New Year's Day. Loss since New Year's Day. Could you imagine if this was the Lakers? It'd be round-the-clock programming.
And that game, by the way, was at Milwaukee, which they avenged 2 days later.
Exactly.
So they've beaten every team they've played in the New Year.
Drubbed the Clippers in Cleveland.
And this was without two of their four foundational players for much of that stretch. Yeah. They have Darius Garland back now. They have Evan Mobley back now.
They're fully healthy at this point. But this is a
month and a half of dominance.
Right. So in this stretch of 18 games, they are third in offensive efficiency, which is amazing because when Garland and Evan Mobley went down in early to mid-December, they ranked like 21st or 22nd. Mm. So over the last 18 games, number three in offense, number one in defense in that stretch. We know the Clippers have been playing great. We know the Celtics have played great defense all year. We know the Timberwolves have played great defense all year. They are number one in that stretch defensively. And the thing about them is that I'm just going to go over the teams that they've played in this stretch. I'm not going to read every one, but here's why it's a little bit hard to quantify. So out of this 17-1, they've played the Wizards three times. They've played the Spurs twice. They've played the Nets, who are in a terrible free fall, twice, including once in Paris. They've played the Raptors twice. They've played the Pistons. They've played the Bulls. They've played the Grizzlies. Their sort of quality wins in there are the one game in Milwaukee, which they split up there. They beat the Bucks at home once, but Giannis didn't play. They beat the Kings at home, but it was on the second night of a back-to-back. At the time, the Kings were 10 games over 500, but I'm just trying to be fair.
The Clippers win was
bona fide with a capital B. The Clippers won 9 of 10 in that stretch. They were 6-1 on that Eastern road trip, including winning in Boston. Anyway, the Cavs also won in Orlando in the stretch. In fact, they won that game by 26 points. Okay, that's the thing. The other side of this streak, guys, is that in the 17 out of 18 games, okay, so they've had a soft portion of schedule. They've outscored their opposition in this 18 games by 303 points.
Oof.
So, okay, so you're not playing the 97 Bulls every night, but you're slapping the teams that you are playing. Mm-hmm. And forget about all the numbers. When you actually watch them play, the ball moves. All of them can shoot threes. They run around like crazy on defense. They pass and relocate, pass and relocate, pass and relocate. There have been times in the fourth quarter where they need Donovan Mitchell to bail them out. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, they move the ball and work together as a team. In this 20-game stretch, Donovan's averaging 29, 7 assists. He's basically played point guard for the large stretch of it, and 5 rebounds. Jared Allen, 18 points, 13 rebounds in these last 20 games. McMahon,
24 double-doubles this season.
And like he's had something like 17 out of the last 20. McMahon, okay, you can say that they haven't played the hardest schedule, but what do you say? Their style of play is amazing, and they're kicking people's butt.
if you win 17 of 18 games in the NBA, I don't like at a certain point, we're not going to dismiss it with schedule because they've had some big time wins in there. Donovan Mitchell has been playing like the Bontemps straw poll. I put Donovan Mitchell on my ballot this time.
Little hint that the straw poll is coming. Little drop. Straw poll is
coming. Yes. Stay tuned for that. Jared Allen, you're a terrible campaign manager because you were lobbying to get him into the All-Star game. And then as an injury replacement, he's been playing at that level. And then again, Darius Garland's recently back. Evan Mobley's recently back. Mobley's still on this minutes restriction. He's playing 24 to 26 a night. Not closing a lot of games because of that.
Is that the reason he's not closing the games?
That's my understanding.
I mean, that's what they're saying.
Okay. But that's my understanding. So let's get to that. Because the question is, hey, are they better off playing with one big? I mean, you can point to some numbers that say that they are, right? Jared Allen running pick and roll with Donovan Mitchell with three shooters around them. Woo, they've been cooking doing that. You know, Mobley's basically a center who plays a lot of power forward. And then the offense numbers with them together, even during this stretch, aren't nearly as good. Now you can say, well, they're also playing against the starters, and so on and so forth. The biggest question there is obviously the spacing. And it's not a huge number. It's still a small sample size. But boys, in the last five games, Evan Mobley's 6 of 10 from three-point range. Now, again.
You know what Evan Mobley's defensive rating has been in those five games?
Like probably not enough to run a fever. What is it?
You're right. It's 98.
98. That's what I would guess. So just to put it in perspective, he's played 28 games a season. He has shot 10 threes over the last five. He shot 11 in his first 23 games.
That's right.
And I'm not saying he's going to shoot it at 60% clip. Obviously, he's not. But if Mobley is a willing and able three-point shooter, a willing and even average three-point shooter, that just bumps the potential up so much for the two big lineups and it affects the spacing so much because he does a lot of other things really well offensively. He's a great finisher. He's a really good passer. He makes the right plays. So his recent uptick in attempts, as much as makes in attempts, I think is something to really keep an eye on because that's what I think can bump the ceiling of this team up to real contender status.
You know, you mentioned Spider for MVP. We got to start talking about JB Bickerstaff for Coach of the Year.
Yes, yes. I think the guy who's under heat a lot of this year.
Exactly. He's doing an incredible job.
Guys, he almost got fired. Say what you want. I mean,
yeah.
You know, they can debate about it, and you can debate the word almost, and they can deny it or whatever. JB Bickerstaff was on a hot bleep seat. And if he had had a bad few days at the wrong time, he'd have probably gotten fired. So, and to rebound from that situation, to have this team playing brilliant basketball, I mean, you just watch them. And I agree, February ain't May, okay? Yeah, and they got a blemish on that resume from the way they played in the playoffs last year, and it was not a shining performance by JB Bickerstaff amongst the failures in that postseason. But my God, Spears, you are so right in bringing that up.
Yeah, and he's done a lot opening up their offense and keeping an elite, you know, defensive approach. And I'm just really, you know, now that Garland's starting to round back into form, let's see how much better they could get. Obviously, there was some talk about, you know, and then it's going to continue about Allen and Mobley and, you know, whether they're good together, whether they play together. I don't know, man, like. The numbers are the numbers. They can only play who's in front of them. And obviously New York got better. And we talk about the Bucks all the time. We talk about Boston all the time. Cleveland's interesting. And Cleveland has size. That matters. And
they did keep an eye on them. Max Strus, George Niang. You know, they made
Paris LeVert.
Yeah, they made a point, though, to address the size shooting issue that they had. I tell you, another guy who is – quietly been a major factor in this, and it's a guy who's been hammered on as a bust. Isaac Okoro, former number five overall pick. It was pointed out to me, hey, there was a stretch where they played pretty close together. James Harden's Clippers, Damian Lillard's Bucks, and De'Aaron Fox's Kings. It was pointed out to me, go look at their numbers in that game and just know that Isaac Okoro's elite on-ball defense was a major factor there. Teams are still going to sometimes put their center on him. They're still going to sag off him. He has been shooting the three a lot better. But when you talk about a team that has been outstanding defensively, you've got to mention him as well.
Isaac Okoro is an all-defensive team candidate. He will probably not make the all-defensive team because he hasn't yet done it for long enough and he's only been a part-time starter. He is absolutely an all-defensive team candidate. Secondly, his rookie year, this is his fourth season, his rookie year, he shot 29% on threes. He's now up to 38%. Now, he doesn't get guarded out there that much, but absolutely, he's, and, you know, he averages 8 points a game. He's not a guy who gets a lot of attention. The other guy, Dean Wade, who last year had the Cavs signed with an extension before last season. They really believed in him. Had a shoulder injury, and his shoulder was never right afterwards, and he just couldn't shoot. Well, he's a big who can stretch the floor. And so this is what I always say. This is what I've been saying about the Cavs for a while. One point guard, one big man, three shooters. That's how they got to play, okay? And what that means is that the floor is spread and the ball moves. That doesn't mean that you can't play Allen and Mobley together, and it doesn't mean you can't play Garland and Mitchell together. But that means that those guys got to play those roles. And if Evan Mobley can prove that he can be declared a shooter, and I don't know if he can get there because you're asking him to do something he has not proven to be able to do, because before he got hurt, he was having the worst shooting season of his career. His shooting had gone the opposite direction. He was shooting in the paint great, but he wouldn't even shoot outside 8 feet because he just wouldn't make it. But that 1-1-3 formula is what J.B. Bickerstaff has gone to that's worked. And especially since just about everybody they put in the game can defend. And even the guys who are on the perimeter, like Mobley and Garland, Garland and Mitchell, who maybe aren't great. When you have great basket defenders, it covers up for them. What's happened is basically JB is gone with the 3-1-1 approach, other than the start of the games, and he's paired Mobley and Garland together, and Mitchell and Allen together. And at the end of games, it's been Allen out there without Mobley, and they've been taking Mobley out with about 7 minutes to play. Now, they've been doing that because he's coming off midseason knee surgery, and they can say he hit his number. And it's a both things can be true. They cannot want to mess with their spacing down the stretch, and they can also say he's run out of minutes. But you play him the minutes that you play him to set out that way. So they're kind of punting the ball down the field, but I have seen not one iota of anything from Evan Mobley except for determination to make this work. And in this last five games, and they are playing at against the 76ers on Monday night, so we'll see. He's averaging 18, 11, and 3.5 assists in the last five games. He is playing great, even under these circumstances, with the minute restriction. That's with the minute restriction, he's averaging 18 and 11. He was not averaging 18 and 11 before, without the minute restriction. And something else I want to say, Spears, because the Knicks have had injuries, you know, the Knicks lost to the Pacers over the weekend, and the Bucks are going through their drama, and the 76ers are dealing with the injuries to Embiid and other players. The Cavs have opened up a nice little lead on the number two seed. As we sit here today on Super Bowl Sunday, they got a 3-game lead on the Bucks in the loss column and have a good chance of winning that tiebreaker. Okay. They're 4 games ahead of the Knicks in the loss column, and they're 5 games ahead of Philly in the loss column, and they play them twice in the next 10 days. They could blow that out the water. And to me, the getting the number two seed is huge for the Cavs, because if you're the two seed, not number one, you get to play a play-in team coming out of the gate. The Cavs had struggles in the first round last year, and you want a low stress first round series if you can get it. Number two, of the teams there, and by the way, they could walk down Boston. They're 5 back. I don't think they'll get there, but I don't want to rule out, you know, people in Cleveland will get pissed off at me if I say they can't get the number one seed. But okay. But
they'll get mad at you regardless.
You're right. Really,
won't be the first time.
Cleveland, Milwaukee, New York, and Philly, and this is with all due respect to Miami, but those four are playing to get to Boston in the conference finals. And if you're the Cavs and you can get that two seed, you have home court against all of them in that situation. So Spears, this is what's on the Cavs plate right now.
Now with Philly and New York additions and Indiana, like the East is interesting, man. I like it, but you're right. Like, Cleveland has to hold on to that number two spot. It'll be really valuable for them. And I, I actually also really like what you said about that first round. Like, get some confidence in the playoffs, beat
they're
somebody.
Still bruised from the way they got the Knicks stepped on them last year. They're still hurting from that.
But I mean, I feel like Milwaukee's going to get better. And the thing is, can Cleveland keep this pace? I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to get excited January, February, you know?
Yeah. I kind of feel like Milwaukee's going to catch up to them. They're going to get better. I think the All-Star break for Doc Rivers is going to be big, you know, having some practices to work with the guys. And so Cleveland could be mad at me. I think Milwaukee's going to end up leapfrogging them. But let's see what JB and company can do.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. So, Spears, you mentioned Milwaukee and the way that you think that they're playing. They made an interesting move on trade deadline day. So, you know, there was 39 players traded. There were 16 trades. A lot of stuff happened. It was mostly backups. But, you know, one of the small trades that sort of made a big impact and certainly put up a lot of eyebrows in the league was Milwaukee acquiring Patrick Beverley, who joined the Bucks over the weekend. This is remarkable for a number of things, but specifically because of his long-running feud with, and it's hard to fill in the blank here because there's so many of them, like Dylan Brooks and Pat Bev, like, but anyway, with Dame Lillard, they've said some things about each other. They've mocked each other. They've gone head to head. Beverly is just as much of an irritant, frankly, as Dylan Brooks is. And part of his game is to get under the skin. And, you know, he's gotten under Dame's skin occasionally. And Dame has sent him home, as he's made clear to point out. But it's kind of an act. I mean, you know, the Bucks might not frame it this way. I'm not saying Doc would say it this way or John Horst, their GM, but it's kind of an act of desperation. They're free falling defensively. They have almost no assets to acquire anybody. And basically they were like, who and out of the 450 players in this league can we get who can defend? And there was like a real short list and Beverly was on it. And if it pissed off Dame, so be it. So Spears, what did you think when this happened and how do you think this is going to go?
First thing I thought about is Dame. Like, what is he thinking? I still see Pat Beverly beating his wrist for the broken watch, right?
And yeah.
Dame's comments about him afterwards were certainly had some East Oakland cut to it, man. Like, yeah, you know, yeah. You cut him pretty bad. And so I'm gonna tell you guys this story, man. I don't think I've ever shared this. And Brian, you might be familiar with there was a player boycott with the Denver Nuggets. It's gonna make sense. Stay with me. When I was covering the Nuggets and James Posey was on the team. And make a long story short, Posey didn't like a quote I had from him, but Posey was on the record. And there were some things I probably could have done better as a younger journalist, and there's things he probably could have handled better. But we really had a bad beef for a couple years and didn't really speak. I end up covering the Celtics beat. Posey's on the team. I go to Italy for training camp with the Celtics. And before we went out there, I had dinner with Doc and, you know, kind of told him about how me and Posey had been on odds.
And just to be clear, this is when the Celtics have just acquired Garnett and Ray Allen.
Yeah.
This is the beginning of
Posey
Mbutu.
Posey was new there too, right? So this is 2007. We're in Rome. And so Doc's like, well, I'm going to make sure you guys fix that and get past that. Yeah, okay, whatever. First day of practice, Doc goes, Spears, come here. James, come here. Y'all go sit in the corner and talk this out. Figure this out. like, I don't play for the Celtics. Like, I'm calling me out. But he knew that I was going to be around the team the whole season. And he, so I give Doc credit. And me and Poe's been good ever since, man. I love Poe's, great dude. And he's back in NBA coaching now. My point in telling this, my point in telling this story is, I'm sure Doc, if there's anything, he's going to make these two dudes sit down and figure it out for the betterment of the team.
And look,
he hasn't done it already.
And Pat Bev has practice in this. You think his beef with Dame was bad?
Yeah.
He literally sent Russell Westbrook to the operating room to start their long-running beef. They went back and forth more than they did with Dame.
Yeah.
It didn't work out well from a success standpoint with a team with the Lakers, but those two guys got to be tight. You know, they got to be buddies. And
I don't know that Dame's going to dinner with him today.
Yes.
You know, but I know that Dame wants to win. And he'll do what's best for the team to win. And he said that pretty quickly after that. Yeah. He made a point like, hey, man, I just want to win games. So I don't know that Doc needs to do what he did for me and James Posey. Maybe he did. Be interesting to ask him. But Doc Rivers always gets a lot of hate, man. I really think he's one of his strengths. He's a great people person. And he'll make sure that those two dudes are on the same page for trying to win.
And he knows Pat Bev. He coached him for a while with the Clippers. And look, Dame is, first of all, he's a grown-up, right? Yeah. Like, and he's a smart guy.
Super professional.
Yeah, right? Who can look at the Bucks and be honest about, man, if there's any team in the league that needed a guy who can come in and be a pest on the perimeter defensively, it's the Milwaukee Bucks. And say what you want about Pat Bev and all his antics, this, that, and the other. He's still one of the best defensive perimeter pests in the league, and the Lakers are an exception. Every other stop during this guy's journeyman career, the team that Pat Bev goes to tends to immediately get better. I mean, the Bulls even played
with
Pat Bev, and if you can make the Bulls look good, you're really doing something right.
Listen, man, it was like four teams ago he was on the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves players still talk about what it was like to have Pat Beverly there. There are some teams that kind of don't want him. Like, remember last year he got traded to the Grizzlies?
Yeah.
Was it the Grizzlies?
A couple years ago. Last year was the Jazz. It was a couple years before that was the Grizzlies.
He was like, hey, Memphis, here I come. And like 10 minutes later, he's
gone.
Let me ask you this then.
I hope he didn't ship anything here. We'll reroute it to Minnesota.
Why do you think he keeps getting moved in?
Because he's a pain in the butt.
It's a weird balance, right?
But a small sample size of Pat Bev has proven to be very, at least has more often than not been very effective. In Minnesota, there were concerns about Pat Bev as the voice in the locker room that everybody listened to.
they didn't keep him. You know, they had him, they loved him, and they said goodbye. Like that.
But they benefited from his presence. He instilled a toughness and a nastiness in that franchise. You know, he celebrated the play-in victory like they won a championship. But look, that was a monumental achievement for a Minnesota franchise that had been in the frozen tundra.
And he beat a team he was emotional about, right? So
there's
that part too.
Well, look, Doc knows him from the Clippers. He knows exactly what he's getting. And he also knows what he's in for. As Jackson says, he's a hustle mercenary. The one thing I'll say, I do think that the Bucks, there are small little signs that they may be finding a little bit of their footing defensively. The numbers don't really back it up, but I do think that there is belief there that the processes are getting better. I don't know if it'll work or if that's just what they're saying to get through this tough time, but like you said, Spears. Yeah.
I covered Doc's first win in Milwaukee, the one that clinched him the honor of coaching the All-Star game. but in that game, they were so proud. They threw this trap on, like Luka lit him up in the first half. Mavs go up 25. They throw this trap on him in the third quarter. They felt like it really kind of got the Mavericks out of their rhythm. The players were I don't know what the name is, but Doc related the players were chanting the name of what they call the trap in the locker room because they had just installed it at the practice the day before. You know, it didn't prevent the Jazz from scoring 40 points in the fourth quarter on the Bucks the very next night, But you know, it's a very strange, unique situation of a proven championship coach who's trying to install all his stuff midway through the season on a team that's basically championship or bust.
All right, so you went to an interesting Mavericks game over the weekend, McMahon. They blasted the Oklahoma City Thunder. Ooh. A really high quality win for the Mavs from their first game with their two new players, PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford. Before we talk about that, over the last 12 games, again, going into Monday through the games of Sunday, 12 games, Luka is averaging 37 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists. Here's a couple of stats here, a couple of history stats. Stats Williams again. He's the third player to average a 35-point triple-double over a 12-game span in NBA history, joining two guys.
Oscar Robertson and Russell Westbrook.
Bingo, bingo. Bang, bang, as Mike Breen would say. All right, how about this one? He's scored or assisted on 57.4 points per game this season, the most entering the All-Star break in NBA history. All right? He's about 0.8 of a point ahead of this Hall of Famer who did it in the early 70s.
Penny Archibald.
You already saw these stats.
I've seen some. I didn't see those ones in particular. I've seen some.
Yeah, he pulled that one out.
He pulled Tony Archibald out like he was his buddy in college.
No, me.
Like he got deserved.
First of all, I would never be buddies with a guy nicknamed Tiny.
Yeah, I know. Trust me. Nobody whose name is Tiny, who's not ironic, wants anything to do with you the way you're such a heightist. All right, Harden has been close a couple of times. One of them was his MVP year. The point is, McMahon, Luka's been playing awesome. And now Kyrie is back. And the Mavericks have some reinforcements. We talked at length the other day. The cost of the reinforcements is a in-depth discussion and a little bit worrisome. Let's put that aside for right now. We'll worry about that in 2029, 2027. You saw the first game with these two guys. You saw Luka's playing. Where are we at with the Mavs?
Yeah, and look, like we don't even have the small sample size with Luka. He's basically 35-9-9 for the season, efficiently. He's playing the best basketball of his career. He's in the best shape he's been in since probably his second season, if not, during his career period. And then Kyrie being back doesn't necessarily cut Luka's minutes, but it does make those minutes less taxing. You know, there are times when Luka can be off the ball, when he doesn't have to bring it up, when he doesn't have to just grind for every inch that he gets on the floor. And look, with Gafford and Derek Lively will be back soon, if not already by the time this airs on ESPN2. But with Gafford and Lively, they can always have a really good rim runner. And, you know, and Lucas said it, and he said it with a smile, but he basically said, we finally got the backup rim protector. Yeah, and rim protector. But Lucas said, we finally got the backup center I've been asking for 3 years. And I'm like, dude, Dwight Powell's locker stall is still like a couple feet away from you, bro. Jeez. But it's true.
Oh man!
What kind of shoes does Dwight Powell wear? That's the most important thing.
He wears Kobe
get those
Grinches.
Euro J's, right?
You know, he's a Kobe Grinches baby. But and look, Lively's for the Thunder played like crap. That's a fact. But Lively came in, played 17 minutes off the bench. I'm sorry, Gafford came in, played 17 minutes off the bench, had 19 and 10, and it's just wild energy. Literally, the first offensive possession that Daniel Gafford played in a Mavericks uniform, what else would it be? He caught a lob from Luka. You know, there will be more of those. And PJ Washington came in. He also came off the bench. He will be in the starting lineup sooner than later. He's going to be their starting power forward, or at least that's the plan. Yeah, he hasn't been a great three-point shooter over the course of his career. He's going to get a lot of really open looks playing with Luka and Kyrie. What he can do, which is something they really didn't have before, is he can attack a closeout. He can attack a scrambling defense off the dribble. If you're going to blitz Luka and it's an advantage basketball situation, he can put it on the floor, get in the lane, and finish. And that's something they just have not had at that position. So the Mavericks definitely got better with those trades. That doesn't mean they didn't take massive risks down the road. But one way to look at it, if you're the Mavericks, is, dude, massive risks down the road, you have to take risks because if you don't, and you're basically telling Luka, hey, we're not going to take risks to try to give you as good a chance as possible to win, you're guaranteeing a bleak future of him saying, this ain't my place. So The most important thing about the trades, other than the fact those guys made an immediate impact, is Luka is excited about them, fully on board with those decisions.
Yeah, they had 11 dunks in the first game and 66 paint points, both most of the season. So, and look, I mean, there have been times where their rotation has not been filled with plus NBA players. Is that a fair thing to say, McMahon?
I would say there's been times when they've had guys who shouldn't be on the floor out there, yes.
Yeah.
And now they're legit 10 deep. You know, I don't know when Dante Exum's back, but they have legit depth of like quality proven NBA players now.
Well, look,
and are you excited about them, Tim?
I still think that it will be an upset for them to get out of the first round. Certainly, I think it is within the realm of possibility that they can climb out of the play-in. They're an eighth now. You know, their goal for the rest of the regular season should be to climb out of the play-in. But, you know, I will say this. If Luka's playing at his best, then they're always going to have a chance because he's one of a handful of players in the league who can just absolutely dominate a playoff series.
Well, I will say this. You know, you look at the teams in front of them. The Clippers are playing great. Denver is the champs. Oklahoma City and Minnesota have been at the top the entire year. Phoenix is ascendant. And they look behind them, and the Lakers and Warriors are taking flight. So they got to go. Like, they don't have a choice. They don't go. It's not even so much what they can achieve. They're going to get left in the dust. So they're entering a new era, and we'll see how it plays out. Thank you for some great conversation. Really enjoyed it with you guys today. Not just saying it. Really liked it. Felt like, got to get you and Spears together more often, McMahon.
Hey, that anytime.
That's like the subtweet that I just did there.
No, I'm just going to straight up add him. Anytime Bontemps ain't around, I enjoy it as well.
All right.
Let Tim, come on, man.
Thank you to Spears. Thank you to McMahon. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you for listening to and watching the Hoop Collective podcast. We'll talk to you soon.
Adios, amigos.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.